All right, back here on the morning show, presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. Second half kickoff, hour number three. David Johnston and Ross Kroll along with you. JD in for the second half of the show. Jeff, good morning, sir.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for bringing caffeine.
No problem. You got the left-hander bringing us in. Old Jimi Hendrix introduced Chip Towers. It
doesn't
get much better than that.
Our man, Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com. Chipper, good morning. How are you today?
Yeah, we got a party in there.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Chip, it is happening, buddy. Boy, this is and just to kind of jump in here, last week, but between the scheduling deal, I don't want to get into the whole thing, but the scheduling deal, the toy tosser, all that, everything that went down, our baseball team had three rainouts. It was really a bizarre week for the Bulldogs last week, wasn't it? And we've all been doing this a long time.
Yeah, it really was. And you know, I mean, I'm kind of left to believe it at this point, you know, nothing's sacred anymore, you know, when it
right.
comes to football and schedules and tradition. You know, college football really needs to be careful, you know, just to,
yes.
you know, to refer to it as in you know, as personified college football. But I mean, you know, honestly, understanding that it's all about, you know, TV and ratings and money and all that kind of stuff. Tradition is what's carried college football for generations. And, you know, they're messing with all that. And, you know, I buy, you know, a lot of the narrative that's being tossed out there for why this is being done and why that's being done. And, you know, I'm going to heed their advice and wait and see what the whole 2020 schedule looks like. But you can kind of piece it together pretty good, and people are starting to do that. And you know, it's don't take it for granted. Things have been going well in that Auburn series for a little while now. And you know,
Tennessee.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, you know, right?
That's what I said. I mean, I'm 100% against it, Chip. And you know, in the end, you know, we're still going to be there, going to still cheer for them, but just the way it works out, it's still going to be Knoxville, Atlanta every other year. You're just trading out the history, the tradition behind it all, the success that Georgia's had in the series. I just completely disagree with it. I was just telling Dave the other part of it, too, for all of us old dogs. I mean, my crew, our crew, the guys, it's 100% against this move. And it also looks like, right or wrong, whatever the perceptions are, the fact that Georgia went over there twice, did the SEC, did Auburn a favor, Georgia never got it returned. And that perception is now Auburn's coming out on top in this, and so is Tennessee, because yeah, we were catching Tennessee after they were playing Florida. So I just don't see any way how this is a win for Georgia. And then the tradition part. And I had a guy, you know, this might seem like nothing, but just little stuff. A guy tweet at me from Savannah, said, man, this is going to be rough. You know, growing up on the coast, my dad said I could go without wearing socks until the Auburn game. But once we played Auburn, I had to start wearing socks.
Yeah,
I tell you what, I got some of my coldest memories mm-hmm. in college football are surrounding that Auburn game. You know, I'll never forget the four overtime game over there on the plains, and they had that press box open. You know, and you can close those panels, or back then you could, but it took an act of God to make it happen, and they couldn't get them closed. And you know, and we had no idea, believe it or not, that was the first overtime game,
right.
and I'm ashamed to say, but I wasn't the only one. Most of us in the press box had no idea what overtime was going to look like.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it was just. So it's like, okay, what happens now? And your fingers are freezing, and you're having to type it up, and you're on deadline. You know, now that's going to be in Knoxville every other year. Now, they do have a closed press box, but for the fans that are going to be up there, I can imagine how cold it is on the Tennessee River in late November.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. And, you know, another thing, too, is that the – yeah, Georgia and Tennessee, I mean, they are arch rivals to an extent, maybe not quite as much as for a couple of other teams, but it's not like, you know, with the Auburn series too, just, you know, the Deep South's oldest rivalry, when Herschel scored his touchdown or when Herschel made his debut against Tennessee, Jeff, I know, will correct me if I'm wrong here, that was the first time the Dogs in Tennessee had played in, what, 8 years?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and you know, they weren't playing every year.
No, and we had a stretch, too, from the – I think we played them in 68, got cheated in a tie, and that was the first time we had played them since, I think, 1937. So
I know,
when
yeah.
the league split into divisions, that got the Tennessee
That's
thing
That's when we
big.
Started playing them every year, because we played them in 80 and 81, and right. then, what, 88 and 89. 89. But, and then 92. So, I mean, when the SEC split into divisions, Georgia had only played Tennessee four times in the previous,
yeah.
like, 12 or 13 years.
Exactly.
So,
well,
I know.
Not to defend what they've done here, but that's got a little bit to do with everything. It's just Tennessee being in the East.
Yeah.
This last game of the SEC schedule can be a stamp your way to Atlanta, as opposed to when you're playing Auburn, you could play them, and as it happened in 2017, turn around and have to play them again.
That was a good thing.
The SEC championship game. I mean, I don't think that was necessarily problematic or anything like that. I think part of the impetus on this was to have an Eastern Division opponent late in the year, so that can be a play your way into Atlanta kind of game.
But you know, with an odd number of teams in each division,
that
you're still somebody's
tough.
Still going to have to play across.
14 is
oh, yeah.
an odd number. It's an even number, but
it's an odd number
when
yeah.
you cut it in half.
So yeah,
it's hard to
well,
schedule.
Well, you're going to get me back on that Auburn ought to be in the East anyway, and that they ought to have 16 teams rather than 14, and they ought to play a 9-game schedule. But
hey, you're
that's
right.
That's a whole other thing.
I don't disagree. You know, the funny thing is, like, I'm not for expansion. It's enough, but 16 would be a better number than 14.
It's easier for but scheduling.
Yeah,
it's easier for scheduling, and it's easier. You know, I mean, I think a 9-game schedule makes sense. I actually, even if expand or not,
Chip, I want the 9-game
Chip,
schedule.
Chip, do you remember what I sent you a year or so ago? A schedule model that I came up with, and Brame helped me, where basically you would do away with the divisions and
yeah.
you'd play a 9-game schedule, and we worked it out for everybody. Basically, like, and then for Georgia, like, Georgia would play Florida, Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Vandy every year. Then out of the other eight, you play 4 1 year, 2 at home, 2 on the road. The next year you play the other 4, 2 at home, 2 on the road. So then over a 2-year period, you would have played everybody in the league. Over a 4-year period, you would have played everybody at least twice in every spot. And then the thinking would be you just have the two best teams, regardless of division, play in the title game if you go that way. So I don't know if something like that would ever work, but to me it made a lot of sense, because the other part of all this is – And I think you're seeing it, like the Georgia-Missouri crowd was light. That, you know, I had a bunch of buddies went to Oxford in 2016 because they're thinking, hell, I'm going to be 68 years old next time we go there. So Georgia and Ole Miss, Georgia and LSU barely play, but Georgia's playing Missouri every year. And it's just one of those things, again, when you're doing away with that history and that legacy, it's that creep, it's that erosion of everything that made it great, of everything that built the passion. And it's a dangerous thing, and especially if for certain teams, if things all of a sudden don't start going right for you, you start losing those things that are sacred. It's a slippery slope, and as we all know, guys, I always heard this from the detectives on NYPD Blue, it's tough to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, do either of you guys know, like, why back in the day Georgia played Ole Miss every year and not Tennessee? You know, I mean,
that's just how it fell. Yeah, played out, yeah.
Because if that, you look at it now, that seems kind of weird.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I didn't know.
You know, it's so funny, not funny, but interesting when you go back and look. You know, there are different, initiatives at different times. You know, when Coach Dooley came, you know, one of his main things was to get Alabama off the schedule,
yeah,
right?
We opened with them every year.
Every year, and just were getting tarred and feathered every year, you know, and so that was one of his initiatives back in the day, and it was strange how you never played Tennessee when they were just 4 hours north of you,
right?
And so I'm glad that they play them, and you know, talk about changing the direction of a rivalry. I mean, Tennessee owned Georgia for the pretty much the entirety of the '90s, almost to the degree of Florida. and into 2000, you remember, I guess it was 2000 when everybody ripped up the hedges when you finally beat them. But that series has completely turned. So, times they always are changing. And, ultimately we're left to roll with it. But you're right, Jeff. I mean, the one thing I would warn about is the people that you talk about, your football club as it is, these are the people who are paying the freight for college athletics. And it's just like I love playing Oregon and I like the Chick-fil-A every now and then. But when you start playing these games somewhere else and not everybody can get in,
yep.
Once again, you're turning off your donor fan base. So I think that the powers that be in the business got to be real careful about keeping your primary fans, the ones that really write the big checks and keep the engine rolling. You better start placating them a little bit more.
Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com. All right, looking forward to your spring analysis and your preview and your write-ups. You've got the quarterbacks out today. Let's talk a little bit about Jake Fromm. All right, 2 years ago, he wasn't the starter. Last year, he was the starter coming in. This year, he is the undisputed starter. So working up the ranks. But, Chip, give us your thoughts on the quarterback position.
Well, I'm eager to see how this works out, because it's interesting, how social media and Twitter is. But that was the headline that we went with, was that, with all his challengers defeated, we finally get to see what Jake Fromm, how he does his undisputed starter. And a lot of fans are out there, he's been Kirby's undisputed starter for the last 2 years. But not really.
No.
If history were to rewrite itself, Jacob Eason had won that job going into the first game, and who knows what happens if he doesn't hurt his knee. And look, you can put any kind of spin on it that you want, but ultimately Kirby Smart recruited Justin Fields to Georgia because he thought he was better. He thought he could beat out Jake Fromm. That's what he sold him on. That's what he told him. That's how he beat out, Florida and Ohio State and others that wanted Justin Fields, as he told him in his living room that you will be given every opportunity to beat out Jake Fromm.
And he was.
You will play.
He was.
Yes. He was, and he didn't. So, congratulations to Jake Fromm, who has, taken on all comers. And now he's in a situation. I think Stetson Bennett is going to be a very capable backup and somebody that you desperately need, but that's exactly what he's doing. There's not going to be any question about who the man is. The man is Jake Fromm, and it needs to be. And I think he'll actually flourish in that role. We can nitpick till the cows come home, but he's pretty much flourished as it is. Nearly a 70% completion percentage, unbelievable knack for reading defenses and getting the offense in the right play, which, let's face it, that's really what the main job is more than anything else. Get the right play in and get the play off. It's not that easy, in time. And he just does a great job of that. And I think he's got the opportunity, based on his arc of improvement to this point, of getting even better this year. He's working on his mobility in the offseason, trying to lose a little bit of weight, doing a lot of different exercise stuff, working with strength and conditioning to try to get a little bit quicker, a little bit more elusive, and then also, to get a little bit more accurate with that deep ball. Georgia's run game and their offensive line ought to be there for him. I think Georgia's offense can really take off, and Jake Fromm can as well in 2019.
And he's going to be the unquestioned leader, too, going into his junior season. And talking about the position, Chip, and great job on that article, as always, my friend. You're just the best. For me, like on signing day, the new signing day, I was going to say,
which one?
Yeah. Getting Trayvon Walker, Nolan Smith, into getting a Kobe Dean, was so excited about that. Warren McClendon, Clay Webb, Dominic Blaylock, getting all these guys. But when the news came down that night that Stetson Bennett had come back, that was as happy as I was all day. There was just this great sense of relief because he's a guy, and I'm just telling you, the people who are around practice every day, talked about what this guy did in the scrimmages, did with the scout team against the first team. They said, this guy's like a little Johnny Manziel, and I know he's not real big and might not have some of the measurables, but the guy can flat-out play, and he knows the offense. I think that might wind up being, because, I mean, at some point, Jake's helmet's going to get knocked off. He might get knocked woozy and have to come out for a couple of plays. You know, God forbid if something happened where he had to miss a quarter, maybe even a game. I'm not saying you could go through a whole year without Jake, but I think getting Stetson back, number one, is going to help prepare that defense. But number two, it gives you a tremendous insurance policy. And you could tell, guys, by the tweets that the players were putting out, when he left and then when he came back, the respect that he has within that locker room.
Well, I'll just never forget, Mel Tucker's words, when Georgia was getting ready for the Rose Bowl. They gave the Bulldogs, and they didn't exactly shut down Oklahoma in that game, but they gave Stetson Bennett credit for giving them a real good look at what they were going to be seeing in Baker Mayfield, and that's kind of what you got in that guy. He's very, very mobile. As Mel Tucker said out there in Pasadena, he said, don't go to sleep on his arm. He can get it where it needs to go and get it there quick. And, just the way fate kind of got involved in it, Kirby fought like the Dickens to not get him, to get him not to leave. Because, look, technically you need three quarterbacks, technically four, that you feel like that you can put in a game who can run a play script. The reality of that, especially in today's world of the transfer portal and everything, at least a couple of guys who can get you through that play script is absolutely important. And then Georgia's got some capable walk-ons, and then obviously the Dwan Mathis guy who they got out of Michigan and away from Ohio State with the Justin Fields hijinks. It's going to take him a little while to get along, but I think the future looks bright with those guys. And, of course, Kirby never stops recruiting. He's recruiting as we speak in some way, shape, or form, I'm sure of it. And that turned out pretty good. Stetson Bennett was an important piece. I agree with you, Jeff.
Chip Towers from the AJC's DogNation.com. Other news from the winter meeting of the Athletic Association last week, getting a much-needed facelift, and that may be an understatement for the Dan McGill Tennis Complex, too. What's going to ultimately happen with the Butts Mayor building, you think?
Well, I think it's going to happen pretty fast, guys. One of the things that Greg McGarrity does really well that he gets a lot of respect for, across college football is following protocol and things. So he's not going to get real chatty about what the plans are, what the timeline is until the Board of Regents has been duly updated and, until the architectural plan and everything is in. But I see this thing coming online, to where it's approved possibly in the spring meeting, and if that happens, I see them shovel in the ground after next season. And the way I understand it at this point, we got to wait until we see what the actual plans are, is this is not going to be an insignificant, small little building ad. This is going to be a huge undertaking. It could run anywhere from 50 to 80 million, as I understand it. And again, that's unofficial. And it's going to go, I'll tell you what, they're running out of room because it's going to go right there where the small little 70-yard kicking field is. Somehow they're going to cram it all in there, and it can't be any taller than the Payne Athletic Center. But this is where we're at. There's a lot of money pouring into college athletics right now. You got this lucrative deal with the SEC Network. You can't pay the players, so you pay coaches and you build buildings. And Kirby, everybody else in the league is getting a new football building. South Carolina's underway. Auburn's about to be underway. Florida's underway. If you're going to compete in this league, and last time I checked, that's Kirby's intention, you got to stay up on that end of things. So I think the football building will start to go under construction certainly in 2020.
I never knew what was wrong with that 40-yard indoor practice facility we had before.
Is that the biggest – I mean, literally, that might be – when you talk about black marks and red flags on the previous administration, if anybody else just blew and wasted $10.5 million, $11 million like that, that might be the worst misappropriation of funds in the history of college athletics. Is there any way to argue that?
No, and when you include that, I mean, you know, there's some out there that criticize Georgia for not doing enough about facilities, but you throw the cost of having that built in with everything else that Georgia has done now, you know, since 2010, 2011, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars that they've spent right now. But, you know, the thing it is, Georgia's handled it the right way. You know, I can't 100% say this, but I do believe that just from a financial health standpoint, doing things prudently and not over leveraging yourself, Georgia's probably in better financial shape than probably any team in the league. Now, nobody wants to be profitable. It's a nonprofit business, but Georgia has done made wise decisions with their money, and they're at the point now where they can really do some expansion. You can't take this, what we're talking about, Jeff, you cannot take this fan base for granted, because they have really come through for you on a lot of different levels, and you got to definitely continue to patronize those guys, because they've done a good job for you.
Well, and you know, another thing this year, too, talking about the fans and the potential travel, and we're allowed to dream here. We're in February, right? You could have potential Atlanta, New Orleans. It sets up if the Dogs can deliver this year.
Well, and you know what? They're going to be in the mix. I have no question about that. Now, you know, talking about 2019, I really liked the way 2019 was shaping up when Elijah Holyfield and Mecole Hardman and Isaac Nauta and a lot of those other guys were still on the roster. That's not a small thing. We can't discount
it's a big
that
thing.
Because
it's big.
That makes Georgia young again, right? You know,
right.
And it's just like Kirby has just been trying like mad to get this into being a seasoned club, and he hadn't had opportunity to have one yet. But he certainly recruited his butt off, and these guys are going to have to grow up fast. But I have no question that Georgia is going to be in the mix, and they should be the runaway favorite in the East again. You know, you got to keep those Gators and keep those balls at bay. They're fighting like mad to get back in there, too. But, 2019 is going to be – it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to follow, for sure.
Chip Towers DN on Twitter from the AJC's DogNation.com. Chip, always enjoy talking to you. We'll catch you again next week.
It's my pleasure.
You're the best, Chipper. Thank you, buddy.
Chip Towers.